हरि ओम सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 37, Nine Limbs of Bhakti. Srila Prabhupada writes in Chapter 14 of Nectar Devotion, Sri Rupa Goswami affirms herein that there are nine different kinds of devotional service, which are listed as hearing, chanting, remembering, serving, worshipping the deity in the temple, praying, carrying out orders, serving Krishna as a friend, and sacrificing everything for him. Each and every one of these processes is so powerful that if anyone follows even one single one of them, he can achieve the desired perfection without fail. Right? So, now, in study of this, then, Srila Prabhupada's purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 7.5.23-24. So this is the teachings of Prahlad, and he's giving this. So it's a very, you know, lengthy and very famous purport. Sri Prahlad said, hearing and chanting about the transcendental holy name form qualities, paraphernalia, and pastimes of Lord Vishnu. Remembering them, serving the lotus feet of the Lord, offering the Lord respectful worship with 16 times of paraphernalia, offering prayer to the Lord, becoming a servant, considering the Lord one's best friend, and surrendering everything unto him, in other words, serving him with the body, mind, and words. These nine processes are accepted as pure devotional service. One who has dedicated his life to the service of Krishna through these nine methods should be understood to be the most learned person, for he has acquired complete knowledge. Purport. When Prahlad Maharaj was asked by his father to say something from whatever he had learned, he considered that what he had learned from his spiritual master was the best of all teachings, whereas what he had learned about diplomacy from his material teachers, Shanda and Amarka, was useless. Bhakti Parishvanu Bhavo Viraktir Yanyatra Cha, Srimad Bhagavatam 11.2.42. This is the symptom of pure devotional service. A pure devotee is interested only in devotional service, not in material affairs. To execute devotional service, one should always engage in hearing and chanting about Krishna or Lord Vishnu. The process of temple worship is called archan. How to perform archan will be explained herein. One should have complete faith in the words of Krishna, who says that he is the great well-wishing friend of everyone. Suridam Sarva Bhutanam, Bhagavad Gita 5.29. A devotee considers Krishna the only friend. This is called Shakyam. Pumsar Pita Vishnu. The words Pumsa means by all living entities. There are no distinctions permitting only a man or only a Brahman to offer devotional service to the Lord. Everyone can do so, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 9.32. Striyo Vaishas Tata Shudras Tepi Yanti Param Gatim. Although women, Vaishyas, and Shudras are considered less intelligent, they can also become devotees and return home back to Godhead. Right. So, Prahlad Maharaj is a, you know, coming in the Kshatriya line, and so naturally his, you know, administrative, application in life is going to be important. That's his occupation will be. Be, you know, dharma, artha, niti, like this. And we can see that his father, you know, applying these principles has become very successful. Right? We can't say that materially Hiranyakashipu was not successful. Right? He had some spiritual problems, but materially he was doing quite well. Right? So he was applying these principles of that Shanda and Amarka are teaching, right? This niti. Because they're his Brahmins, they're his teachers. So he's going to be discussing with them, he's going to be learning, he's going to have other such persons. But so Prahlad Maharaj's point is that what you need to know for your occupational duty, that you know, you learn. But as far as what is valuable in learning, that's spiritual life. That's transcendental. Right? Other things aren't actually important. Right? They're important in that you have to have some place to keep the body, right? Because without the body, you can't do your service. So the body has to have some place to stay. It has to have something to eat. You know, basic facilities must be there. You have to be able to keep it clean. So that's what the occupation is for. Right? So the occupation provides the facility so that one can engage those elements that you think you are that you're not. Right? So therefore, though it may take up time, it may take up energy, it may take up so much thought and intelligence, still it is not as important as the spiritual. Right? So that's Hermanu then says that for a Brahman, then he should not overly distract himself with material benefit. How much is necessary? That much. But more than that, he shouldn't. Because more important is studying the scriptures. Right? So if it comes down to having a really great job and being able to study, then Manu recommends for a Brahman, have a simpler job, doesn't pay so much, but study. Because otherwise, maintaining the body, you know, like that, the animals do that. Right? That's what they're doing all day. They wake up in the morning, right? They discuss about, you know, what's happening in the way of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, and then they spend the rest of the day looking around for things to eat. They maintain themselves. They have their nest, they have their particular tree they sit in, they got their spot on the tree. Right? It's their spot. Right? If another bird's sitting there, they'll scare him off. It's his spot, right? So they have their place, they have their food, they have their companionship, they have their families. They do all that. But the problem is that's all they do. Right? So that's why they're called animals. Right? Now, if the bird was sitting in the tree studying Gita and chanting Vedic mantras, we probably would have a different name than the category of just animal. You know, other than means, you know, they're not human, you know, like that. But you wouldn't have to have a generic, you know, just like you have human and you have bird, you have bee, like this. Right? But because the animal is only interested in eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. So if you look at it very directly, an occupation that you have, that's all it does. Your occupation takes care of your eating, your sleeping, your mating, and your defending. And that's where it ends. It doesn't do something more. If it doesn't do anything more, no one will complain. You know? No one's going to complain. But if it doesn't accomplish that, they'll say, you know, you're not doing very well. Right? So his point is that's okay. And it's not that he doesn't go to school, not that he knows all this stuff. Right? Otherwise, how is it that after his father, he runs the kingdom? Right? I think we noticed that his father was killed when he was 5, right? When was he established on the throne?
Soon afterwards.
Yeah, that I know of, when he was 5. Right? So he became the king at 5. And it's not that, you know, he didn't say, well, I don't know what to do and all that because all this material stuff is useless. No, it means it's useless as far as actually being a goal. It's just something you do, like you breathe. You know? It's not that you make a whole thing out of breathing. No, but you breathe. Well, if you don't breathe, think of it this way. You don't eat, you'll last about 30 days, and then you'll die. You know, you don't drink water, you may last 3 to 5 days, and you'll die. You don't breathe, you know, you have, you know, basically a minute or something, and then you go unconscious, and then 5 minutes, you're dead. So it's very important, right? more than anything else. You could go your whole life without a house, without a mortgage. Amazing, right? No mortgage, you can live like that. You know, without sex, right? Without having to, you know, defend yourself, right? But breathing, you know, just a couple of minutes. So how important is breathing? But do we put a big emphasis on it? No, it's just done. So his point is also the occupation and that knowledge and skills for the occupation, it also has the same amount of effort. You put in, you're regularly breathing, but you don't concentrate on it. You concentrate on spiritual life. Does that make sense? So it has to be seen in perspective. Otherwise, nowadays, devotees too much at the time put so much importance on occupation and material knowledge and skills to be able to have an occupation so they can live at what they would consider, you know, a dignified middle class lifestyle. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. So it's coming from the middle class conditioning. Right? For the poor, if you have a job and you can maintain yourself, that's good enough. If you're educated or not, doesn't matter, as long as you can have a job. Right? And for the rich, to live like a middle class person, that would be terrible. Right, you know? Ordinary common persons, you know, go on the subway and all those common people are there. No, you stay on the roads. You go in your limo or you go in a taxi. Right? You know, you don't go in the subway. You know, so it's just what facilities that the middle class are considering very important, the rich person wouldn't even consider. Right? But it's in a different league. So it's not accessible. The individual, it might be, but not as a group. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, get educated, get a job, get all your facilities and all that, and then, you know, everything's perfect. You understand? But Prahlad Maharaj's point is everything's not perfect. It becomes perfect when there's Krishna consciousness. So that doesn't mean the other things aren't done, but it just doesn't mean that they have any prominence. Right? Does that make sense? Because nowadays, if you discuss education, then, you know, what skills will they have? What will they be able to do in the world? How will they be able to maintain themselves? These are the questions you get. I think once in 30 years, I've had a parent ask, will they be able to, you know, do something like have a, you know, solid service in a temple, you know, preaching, a pujari, a temple president, or something like that? From going to this school, will they be able to do that? I think, but it's been so long, I might be hallucinating. Just hoping one day someone would ask that, you know, you start to hallucinate that they did ask. But in reality, I don't remember. I just don't. It's always, you know, how will they be able to maintain? How is this? Okay, great, you know. But it's the opposite of what Prahlad Maharaj is talking about. Those are there. Right? You know, Prabhupada says, you know enough, you're not considered stupid. You know? But it's like, I went to so many schools, and I remember, was it fifth grade? We had to draw maps, you know, like that. So you have to take a map and copy it and do all the different, you know, you pick your, you know, some kind of map, you know, like the topographical or political or something, and then you have to copy it. And, you know, you spend, you know, half of your school life looking at an atlas. But every time I see a picture of, you know, some place, like especially Europe, it's completely different than my concept of it. Like that. And the more I look at it, it gets different and different. Like that. You know, you notice things. Like, you know, before, you know, there's England, and then there's France, and there's Germany, and there's Italy down here, and then there's the East Bloc somewhere over here, and all this and that. But you look at it, and if you look at it, really, Spain is fully a peninsula. It's got water on three sides. And France basically has it on two sides. Just if Spain was part of Italy, then it would have it on three sides. You know, but somehow or another that didn't work out. So, you know, Spain's Spain and France is France. So, you know, so like that. But if you look very carefully, then you have the Baltic Sea at the top, and you have the Mediterranean going into the Black Sea and the Caspian Sea. So basically from St. Petersburg You know, to the west, the whole of Europe is actually a peninsula. You know? Yes, so you look at it, but I never noticed that before. You know, there's countries now that, you know, aren't there. You know, when it was Cambodia when I went to school. Now it's Kampuchea. You know, like that. You know, so it's constantly changing. So that's the point. There's so much emphasis on that. And guaranteed, there's no job that I would do or would get based on my knowledge of what the Atmos is. You know, but because it's one trivial factor that most, you could say, every adult can remember, then they think that they're doing really great academic, testing of a student's knowledge by asking, well, you know, do you know where, you know, Timbuktu is, you know, like that, or, you know, stuff like this. And then if the kid doesn't know, oh, what are you teaching these guys? I had one person ask, do you teach them what H2O means? You know, and I said, you know, at this point, not particularly. Well, how do you know? Everybody knows this. It says, give me one more. Go ahead. Name me salt or name me anything. They don't know. Some of it's the only thing that's stuck in their head, you know. You know, what is it? HCl, like that. That's gone. All these other things are gone. But that one's stuck. So if you don't know that, you're uneducated. So Prahlad has a different view. All these things are nice. If you need them in your occupation, learn it. Do it. But the only real thing is these nine processes of devotion. You know them, or even know one, then your life is perfect. Otherwise, you know, another polished animal, right? It didn't work out so good with her Hiranyakashipu, you know. So in other words, you know devotional service, then you meet God, right? And that meeting and interaction remains eternally. You don't know devotional service, then you might be fortunate, like Hiranyakashipu, to meet God, but it doesn't necessarily turn out so great. You know? You know? Does that make sense? That makes sense. So, and this means other branches of knowledge. It's very much dependent upon your conditioned nature. You have the conditioned nature for it. You can learn it and do it. You don't have, you can't. It's just the way it is, right? You know, the artist generally can't figure out business. Businessman can't figure out the art. This, it's just the way it works. But devotional service, anyone, and he uses the term by all living entities. So even the animals technically can do. Right? Like that. If nothing else. If they don't talk, then just try feeding a bishop. If they talk, then you can discuss philosophy. Right? So that means that you would be able to discuss philosophy with Mr. Ed. Right? But other than him, then most likely you're not. Oh, maybe also the, what is it called? Those three chipmunks, you know? Like that, Alvin and them, you know. So other than them, then just Prashad. But if you bump into anyone's that talk, then you can discuss philosophy, right?
That's the whole Sesame Street gang.
Yeah, Sesame Street gang. You know, so there's a few, but I mean, it's pretty limited. Pretty limited. And they're in another part of the world. Someone has already got that covered, right? You know, like that. After performing sacrifices, sometimes a person engaged in fruitive activity customarily offers the results to Vishnu. But here it is said, Bhagavat Yatha. One must directly offer everything to Vishnu. This is called sannyas, not merely nyasa. Right? Sannyas means complete. Nyasa, you're offering, so it's renunciation. But it's been done for your own purposes, but because you're religious, because you're pious, then it's being offered. Because it's the rule, not that you would specifically do it otherwise. Right? The sannyas means it's being given beforehand. So then the work is being done on behalf of God. So it's different than if you're doing it then you're doing it for yourself and then offering it to God. There's a difference. A tridandi sannyasi carries three dandas, signifying kai, mano, bhakya, body, mind, and words. All of these should be offered to Vishnu, and then one can begin devotional service. So this is the external to make sure that that's done. But the point is, as I said before, Pumsa, all living entities, means anybody can act on that platform of sanya. So the body, the mind, the words is engaged in the Lord's service. Right? So then that works. All of these should be offered to Lord Vishnu. Then one can begin devotional service. Food of workers first perform some pious activities and then formally or officially offer the results to Vishnu. The real devotee, however, first offers his surrender to Krishna with his body, mind, and words, then uses his body, mind, and words for the service of Krishna as Krishna desires. Right? So the one is you're doing the work, there's no surrender. So the body, mind, and words are being engaged for your own fruit of purpose. Then you are offering the results. But in offering, it's not that the body, mind, and words has been used. You understand? It's part of the ritual. But you're worshipping a demigod, you have to worship Vishnu. So the Shaligram has to be worshipped. The remnants from the Shaligram are offered to the demigod. You know, at the end, and the results at the end go back to Vishnu. But the point is you're just looking at it as a ritual. Okay, to start the worship, I have to worship Vishnu, and at the end I have to worship. But it's the middle that's the substance. That makes sense? So therefore, it's fruitive results. Because the whole thing, the consciousness, was fruitive. Right, so it's not counted as devotional service. Right. So here is that the devotee, he surrenders first, then serves. Then that's called devotional service. Right? Because otherwise before is what you're reading in pure devotional service. The pure unalloyed devotional service, there is no other aspects to it. Renunciation is not part of it. It's not a limb. Right? It only has the desire for it. So it's non-different. But in your sadhana bhakti, right, or upaya bhakti, then you have that goal to get to. So therefore, the mood to desire the devotion, to please Krishna, is there. But then it also has the renunciation. You understand? So then it has two, which the phala bhakti doesn't have. It only has the one. So that renunciation, that you're giving up something for Vishnu. You understand? So as the consciousness improves, then the element of renunciation becomes less and less. Because you're renouncing something that you consider is yours to renounce. Right? But if it's not yours to renounce, you know what I'm saying? Then there's no question that renunciation is an important part of your devotional service. If you see everything as Krishna's already, then there's no need to renounce. Right? Because renounce means giving up what's yours. Right? Sannyas means recognizing that nothing is yours. It belongs to the Lord. Does that make sense? So we could say renunciation comes naturally, but it's not an anga, it's not a process, right? For the sadhaka, it's a process. We have to constantly remind ourselves that it's Krishna's. Doing something, then the results for Krishna. Or in some areas, you know, we do it nicely for Krishna. Other areas, for us, then we have to give it to Krishna. So does this make sense? Right? So these nine processes, these are then direct. Right? Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives the following explanation in his Tatya. The word Shravana refers to giving oral reception to the holy name and descriptions of the Lord's form, qualities, entourage, and pastimes, as explained in Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and similar authorized scriptures. After orally receiving such messages, one should memorize these vibrations and repeat them, kirtana. Smaranam means trying to understand more and more about the Supreme Lord, right? Because, like before, we say manana means you're contemplating what you've heard, right? So you're hearing it, you're chanting it, but you're contemplating it to understand it more. Because then by understanding it, then you can apply it. So it's always practical, it has to be applied. So the Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam means it's being applied in the life. It's not just theory. It's not, you know, so one can't say that it's not practical, right? But one has to make it practical. And Padma Sevana means engaging oneself in serving the lotus feet of the Lord according to the time and circumstance. And so whatever is the certain, you take care of. And so that means the circumstance, time and circumstance means the situation means the facilities. Right? So it belongs to the Lord. So that means it would include, you know, the devotees interact, because this is the situation, right? So what does one do in this situation? Right? Does that make sense? You know, now Shravanam is the prominent. Shravanam Kirtanam is the prominent. And then we're contemplating it, Smaranam, we're asking questions, you know, like that. So that process is going on. But when the class ends, then you'll be interacting with the devotees that are here. That turns into Padasevanam. Does that make sense? Because that's the situation, you're interacting with the devotees in the situation. Yes?
The teaching, I mean, direct teaching like you're doing now, is that part of Padasevanam?
It's Kirtanam.
Kirtanam.
Yeah. Means you've heard.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Right? You know, yeah, after oral receiving one should memorize those vibrations and repeat them.
Yeah.
You know, and it's by repetition that we also are able to remember. You know, so it nourishes each other. So by speaking it, then one remembers it. So what was heard, if one speaks, then one will start to remember, right? And if you remember, then you can contemplate. Because you can't contemplate something you can't remember. Yeah, there was this great verse, you know, I don't remember what it was. I don't even remember what it was talking about, but it was really worth contemplating. But, you know, I just can't for the life of me remember. You know, it'll be hard to do, you know, you can... At least you can appreciate the process of contemplation, but, you know.
So, in the Padasevana is like the situation, and then
yes.
There's an opportunity to serve the devotee.
Yeah, the devotee, specific devotees, but it can be any of the, like serving the Dom, like cleaning the temple, serving Tulsi, devotees, all these things come into Padasevana, like that. What's the situation, what you could do like that? So it means I think there's a fuller explanation here, but this is just he's giving you like in a summary, so we understand the prime principle. Then from there, when we look into the detail, we don't get lost in the detail, right? Because otherwise, the detail, yeah, we get too much into the detail. I was just speaking with someone who, for them, the detail is the principle. Right, and they absorb themselves in it, and because you change your perception of the detail, then that changes how you deal. So in their mind, all the mechanics of change, you know, I was trying to explain, like the spirit, you know, you're walking, so in the reflection there's walking, right? So therefore the mechanics of it are the same, but the difference is the consciousness. But he can't tell the difference, the consciousness connected with the soul, the mind, the intelligence, the senses. So to him it's all just one very happy, you know, mishmash, you know, pleasant. You know, whichever one is prominent at the time, you can get taste from that, and it's all but very gentle. You know, he's very, very well situated, you could say, in the New Age path. You know, you could say like that. Very, very soft-spoken and, you know, methodical and thinking and everything like that. So then, and he's explaining, so he had issue with yesterday's the example of the smart Brahmin and the prostitute. Right? You know, because the work itself, if you change the consciousness, the work changes. So therefore, if her consciousness changed, how could she still be a prostitute? Right? He didn't catch the point, which would be more applicable to him, because since he's not a prostitute, at least he didn't get defensive when I mentioned anything, so I kind of get the idea, you know, is that for him, the more idea would be the smarta, would be the one, the example, because that's actually the point of it. The point of the example is the smarta, he's got the problem. The prostitute doesn't have the problem. The smarta, except for the pile of rocks in her front. Other than that, you know, The smarta has the problem. So the example is there. One has to know where the example is being applied. Right? So then, for him, then, you know, time and the senses, you know, and all these different things are just different. They're all the principles. So I change the consciousness means now I'm aware of the ants, so therefore I don't step on them. I walk a little lighter, I, you know, a little more careful. like that. But the principle of what is walking, that he can't appreciate at all. It says one foot goes in front of the other. That's called walking. Now, your consciousness is the detail. To him, the principle had no meaning. The only value was the detail. So he's actually unable to see. So naturally, how can he understand the example? So, you know, for someone like that, then you can't give that kind, you have to give some more pious. You know, in other words, two pious persons, and one was more conscious and one was less conscious. You know, like that. You know, it's always a risk using that one. You know? Previously, it wasn't at all, because everyone would just go, yeah, the consciousness. But nowadays, because there's so much of a distraction by the externals, then it is a risk using that as an example. Okay. So, in other words, this is the principle on which the further details are going to be established. So it's very important to be able to appreciate the principle, the root. It doesn't change, because the principle won't change no matter what the situation. Right? You know, you're walking gently or you're not, still one foot goes in front of the other. That doesn't change. But the consciousness changes, one's perception changes, then it changes how one walks, right? Just like in Bharat Muni's Natya Shastra, which defines drama. Then he has a whole chapter on how does a particular kind of person walk, right? And so that's one of the practices, is they just stand like them, walk like them, hold themselves like them. You know, the king will do in one way and the other. You know, it tells even like how they hold a lotus flower. You know, Vishnu will hold it, Gandhara, like, you know, very fine. You know, the Rakshasa will just grab it. You know, like that. Wow. like that. You know? So these are all the things that you put them together. Otherwise, if the Rakshasa is there holding it very daintily, you know, what's going on? You know, that's why it's where they go. You know, I said, Monty Python, you know, they bump into these big monster guys, you know, with armor and all that, and, you know, blocking the way. And so what could we do to, you know, how you say, please you that you'd let us pass? And then they discuss amongst themselves, bring shrubberies, very nice different kinds of, you know, plants and flowers and all, you know, it's like, you don't expect that, you know, like that, you know. You know, you say, yeah, okay, bring a trunk of gold or, you know, something like that. You know, but, you know, so, no. So, like that, it doesn't match. Does that make sense? So, the principle remains the same, but the detail will change depending on consciousness. Okay.
For the New Age, the big thing is the emphasis on the detail.
Emphasis and gentle detail.
And gentle.
Gentle detail. And everybody, you know, it's your realization, but it's free for anyone to take something from and enrich their own understanding, just like you can take something from theirs, and you know it'll be yours then, you know. So it's this whole thing of, you know, ego, and you know, I can take yours and call it mine, and you can take mine and call it yours, you know. So, you know, this very seemingly gentle agreement, you know, that they can plagiarize from each other's, but you still have to, you know, I mean, it's just, you know, it's not a good habit, but he would get upset that he would be making his point, you know, very elaborately, and I'd butt in and then try to make the point. No, you have to let him finish, because there's that flavor of expressing, you know, how, and he's going to show how he puts his foot and all this, and you know, like, you know, yeah. So that means to do that kind of preaching, then one has to be able to present it in a very soft way. But it's not that we don't stick to the direct philosophy, but it just has to be pleasantly presented. Otherwise, it doesn't. They can't culturally relate to it. It's too harsh and too. You know,
So about this principle in detail, can we also relate this concept to spiritual education and material education?
Yes. Means your spiritual education, then it's mainly about the principles of what are working, and then details of, you know, application, then you're going to have to take that and yourself apply the specific detail, because everybody's life's different. That's why it's so universal. But on material education, then the emphasis is going to be that if at best, if you have a really, really good teacher, you might get the principle. But otherwise, they'll teach the detail and specific to a certain situation, not anything else. You know, you're going to learn that. You know, if they teach you mechanics, you're learning mechanics for, you know, a Mercedes or a Ford or this. You're not learning mechanics in general. That you learn from someone who, you know, works at the shop. Then, for them, they could say, this is just how it works. But the other ones are specific, just for a specific application. That's so rare you'll get a get principles like that. Yes?
When
did it start?
So what was their beginning? Why did it start?
Why did it start? From what I can see, then no, there may be other fact. I mean, you do have just the natural materialistic consciousness will go in that way, because eating, sleeping, mating, defending is the focus. So one will just apply a skill to get that done. But previously you could say, yeah, probably just in general, you could say pre-Christianity, that didn't exist. Because for all the religions of the world, you know, at least your ancient religions, then the philosophy, the culture, the lifestyle, the knowledge was all one package. They all connected. So, you know, your occupation, you had to be God conscious. You know, your family life, you had to be God conscious. All these different things, you had to be God conscious. So then, but the problem is because their lifestyle was so intertwined with their faith, you couldn't separate them, which is their strength. But as far as at least establishing monotheism without any philosophy goes, then it's a big obstacle, right? So then you have to remove the lifestyle to remove the philosophy. So as one sees early, I mean, very early Christians, I mean, first Christians didn't have a problem because they were Jewish, right? But when it went beyond Judaism, then they just destroyed the culture. You have to establish the faith. Right, and since the faith is more important, then you know it's not. You could understand why that would be used as a method, but they weren't intelligent enough to be able to, or knew the philosophy enough to be able to take what was there and establish, you know, or give a more universal lifestyle, you know, that like is given in the Vedas. So then it goes on nicely and everyone has their faith, but then material prosperity, other things like this that are valuable to individuals, then how long does this go on for? Now, of course, that the Messiah is going to rise up again and it's going to be the end of the world, then you don't have to worry too much. So the very early ones didn't worry about it, because at 100 it was supposed to happen. And then when it didn't happen at 100, then they figured it was 1,000. But it didn't happen at 1,000. Then they said 2,000. Then they thought, well, it's a long time, so let's get back to. So then your you could say your Western Academy started, where they're trying to, they're looking at it as God's creation, but it's still getting in the way of, you know, what's observable. Because in the Vedic, the whole point is take Shabda, you know, what you've heard from authority, and make it observable. So the two have to match. But the problem here is coming that the only thing heard is the Bible, since, you know, the Christians had so thoroughly burned Alexandria, where, you know, you had the, you know, was it the one of the seventh wonders of the world. So therefore, you know, there is no science. So then science naturally starts to come up. And then you could say, but it was a fight, you know, between the church and the academics. And you could probably say in the late 1700s, then the academics won. You know, and so now they could run academics that had nothing to do with God consciousness. Before, it had to be somehow or another connected, which was good. But at the same time, it still didn't match observable. So now it's like the science runs very nicely, but the religion doesn't. Before, the religion ran nicely, but the science did. But if you go back to the ancient cultures, they both ran nicely together. You know, so that's basically what I could... Does that make sense? So it's the inability. So devotees get conditioned, are conditioned by their secular educational upbringing. So they also have difficulty seeing the sciences and the faith as non-different. You know, because it's but science is this. So what? Where did they get it from? They just observed what's already there. You know, it just confirms. If the scientist says, yeah, you know, 9 out of 10 people do this, but who made the rule? Why is it 9 out of 10? Did the scientist make the rule? No. Because he observed it, now it's his rule. You know, it's like I come along and, wow, what's this? Now it's mine, right? Yeah, like that. You know what I'm saying? But it doesn't work like that. It doesn't work that way. It's that it's already there, so they're understanding what's already present. Like, you know, when we understand karma, now we don't, you know, call it, you know, oh, now the, you know, yeah, so karma, excuse me, but that's now called Bhakta Jose, you know, because he understood it, you know, like that. He was the first one here in the temple, he understood it, so now it's a Bhakta Jose. You know, like that. You know, does that make sense? So it's you know, it's not how it works, but that's what the modern scientists are doing. They're seeing a law of God, and then they're saying it's their law, right? Newton's third law, right? You know, it's like that. No, the apple fell on his head. It was already happening beforehand, but now it's his third law, right? You know, like that. Does this make sense?
Maharaj, is that when science is gliding up, it takes the perspective of Aristotle, which he says the substance is in the matter?
Yes, because science now is going by what is observed, right? Means, and that it has to be quantified through math. Though there are, you know, your psychological and these kind of studies, sociological, but your hard sciences don't accept them as science. And socially, technically, means in a general society, but in an academic society also it's the same, because your mathematicians, your physicists, and that, they sit in the front, the professors, you know, and your arts professors and your psychologists, they sit at the back. You know, it's just the way it is. It's just because it's... So the difficulty comes is then they're accepting what they can observe with the senses. So their intelligence is being applied. But unfortunately, because they don't understand the subtle sciences of the mind and consciousness, therefore, their actual interpretation of these facts that they get with their senses then starts to have weakness. Right? So that's why it's incomplete. But if they're God conscious, then you see, you know, we have our own ISKCON scientists, then it's not incomplete. Right? Because they're able to match them. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes?
How would the skills and your practical knowledge would be ideally combined with a Vedic education?
So how would the skills be combined with the Vedic education? What are you supposed to do with it?
Well, it depends. You know, you have Brahmanites, for example, Kshatriya, Vaishya, different skills which people do for, you know, for living, something, occupational skills.
So it means you can't figure it out, or...? What's the basic principle of an occupation? Knowledge, skill. No, but I'm saying you use knowledge and skills as a tool. What is the purpose? Okay, but then you have no problem with it.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
Otherwise, you make your living.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, what's the point of your living? Yeah, eating, sleeping, making, defending. But that requires
money.
Right? In other words, you're trying to generate the facilities for ashram. Right? Isn't it? That's what it's for. occupation is to generate facilities for ashram. So varna is to support ashram. Right? So the point is then if you're using those facilities in the service of God, then they're connected. You know, maybe not intellectually, but they're connected. But if one has the inclination or the need, then one intellectually looks at each thing, why it functions. Right? You can't make profit if you sell something for more than what you bought it. Right? So you want to make, right? And the idea is to make more profit. Right? So where can I buy it the cheapest and where can I sell it the most expensive? So, you know, over somewhere in Borneo, you just pick it up off the road and all that. So all it took, you know, cost you was, the mule ride or something like that, and then the other thing, and then the thing over to here to get it back to where you can sell it, you know, on Fifth Avenue for very expensive. You know what I'm saying? So that's what you're doing. You know what I'm saying? So if you buy it in New York and sell it in Borneo, you're going to have a problem. I'm not sure there's anything you could sell over there. You know, it's like that. You take, you know, whatever it is, you know, you went down to Canal Street, you know, got some really cheap stuff, and then took it over to Borneo and showed it to the natives there, and then they hand you, you know, a shell. Right? And then you take the shell back to New York. Yeah, and then you see what you can get from, you know, over there.
A shell from Borneo.
Yeah, shell. Yeah. Might go, you know, find some special boutique.
Education nowadays,
yes, so it means your specific skill. Why does it work? It means it's just like this. If you want to type the letter A on your computer, so can you push Z? Huh? No, it's close. You know, it shouldn't be, you know, why you're getting upset? It's very close, you know, like that, you know. You be encouraging, you know, I'm trying, you know, like that. You know what I'm saying? No, but so the point is it doesn't work, so it's against the laws. So that the point is a specific work gets a specific result. You know what I'm saying? So that means the particular letter you want and your finger have to be connected. Right? Does that make sense? And it has to be according to the situation, right? So therefore, you don't press too hard, right? You press too hard, then you break the keyboard. That makes sense? So you just have to take this and apply it to what you're dealing with. It's not a matter of what do you do, it's a matter of what are you dealing with. And what are the laws governing what you're dealing with? Where did those come from? So that way you connect it back. Right? But that takes time. Right? And since time is money, therefore most people don't bother with it. Huh? Archana means worshipping worshipping Lord Vishnu as one does in the temple. And Vandanam means offering respectful obeisances. Manmana bhavamad bhakto madhyajimam namaskuru, Bhagavad Gita 18:65. Vandanam means namaskuru, offering obeisances or offering prayers. Thinking oneself to be Nitya Krishna Das, everlastingly a servant of Krishna, is called Dasya. And Sakya means being a well-wisher of Krishna. Krishna wants everyone to surrender unto him because everyone is constitutionally a servant. Therefore, as a sincere friend of Krishna, one should preach this philosophy, requesting everyone to surrender unto Krishna. Atmanivedanam means offering Krishna everything, including one's body, mind, intelligence, and whatever one may possess. Right? Later it'll come up, but see, here is that thing is your dasyam is like the can be taken as the beginning of devotional service, right? The neophyte. Then the Shakyam is preaching, that's the Madhyama, and Atmanivedanam, that's the Uttama. Right? By consciousness. So therefore we see as even the newest person is preaching. Right? Even though they don't have the realization, they're following the occupation. Right? And the Uttama, though he has different realization, he's following the occupation of the Madhyama. Right? So Madhyama is the standard position. Right? Then consciousness you try to develop. One sincere endeavor to perform these nine processes of devotional service is technically called bhakti. Right? One sincere endeavor. Remember before it was, that's all it is. It's just sincere desire and endeavor. That is bhakti. Right? Perform these nine processes, because those are direct. It's technically called bhakti. The word adha means directly. One should not be like the karmis who perform pious activities and then formally offer the results to Krishna. Right? So the devotee is performing things and giving to Krishna, but it's not formally. You know, it's meant devotionally. So that offering, that desire to please Krishna, that's the devotion. But the activity itself is only an instrument. Does that make sense? Like that. So it doesn't have the same quality as the direct. That's why he uses the word direct. Right? We're only engaged in indirect because we're conditioned. And we're already distracted by that. We would be doing those indirect anyway. So now it's a matter of getting those indirect connected to the Lord. That's what we're trying to do.
Maharaj, could I make a distinction here with this formal? Like a person works, he comes to the temple, just regular to take a girl, so he gives some 10 rupees, takes a girl, and the other person, even though not pure, is making a girl and thinking of the Lord. Is that the formal or is
No, here formally, I get the idea here because the example before. Fruitive workers informally offer or officially offer the results to Krishna. I would say as it's going over the example, you get more of the ideas we're talking about within the karmakanda. But at the same time, is the neophyte means fruitive worker, right? But now he's trying to reform that by his conduct, connecting that to Krishna, so it doesn't take on the fruitive element in it. So, depending, he may formally or like that. What would you say if let us say, yeah, is that it? If someone needs recognition to be inspired to do the service, that means there's some formal element there. Right? You know, but if it's recognized or not, then it has the other element that it's done for Krishna. You know what I'm saying? You know, that's why, let's say, someone who's cultivating people, he's a collector. So a very important element is recognizing. Because he knows if you don't recognize, they lose interest. You know what I'm saying? Because with us, even you recognize, how much do you get? Right? You know, but they'll give in charity to some local orphanage or that. They'll have the picture there. There'll be that 6-foot check. There'll be tons of smiling people around. You know, a nice little article in the newspaper. You know, something's happening like that. But, you know, generally, for us, it doesn't happen, right? And not only that, is that the karmis only occasionally do something nice. The devotee's doing something nice all day, so you could have a newspaper that just did all that, but it would be very full. You know, it'd be like the Sunday edition every day. You know how much service goes on. It might not sell. my grandfather was saying once when he was young that one newspaper head, you know, the newspaper head, he got tired of that the newspaper is all bad news. So he decided he'll create a niche, you know, of a newspaper that only has good news. So it went out of business. You know, nobody wants that good news. Yeah, so what? No. And it'll be hard to fill up. That could be also the thing. Where do you get this good news?
So formally he is conscious.
Yes, formally he's conscious. So you means you're formally or like that, you go and you give it to Krishna and stuff like that. The other is that it's already, you're already surrendered, it's already Krishna. So you're already thinking about it before you work. But this is, you've done the work, then you offer. So we use a combination, just like at night, according to Pancharatra, you know, it's part of Archanam. Then, when before taking rest, one offers one's activities of the day to Krishna. One does that, then you might be surprised, you know, like that. As you go through your day, what can you offer to Krishna? You know what I'm saying? So, you know, you went to Mangalartik and the japa was fairly nice, and you know, you tried to do this for him today, but you know, then you know, so many other things, and arguing with that other devotee, and all that, it makes it hard. So then one thinks, you know, tomorrow I'll do better, right? So then you go to sleep with that. When you wake up in the morning, then you first thing offer your obeisances to the spiritual master, you know, to pray, to do nice service. So then you'll remember those things, and then you'll try to improve. So that's where the archan process, it uses it. So formally it's offered, even though you may have been doing it for Krishna, but it'll improve the quality and expand the variety. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So there's not a problem in it, but as has been pointed out before, is there is a difference between the pure unalloyed and pure and, you know, just, you know, your karma misra, jnana misra, bhakti. So the idea is that, you know, the beginning stage of karma misra bhakti is glorious because it's connected to the Lord, but pure unalloyed devotion is more glorious. So therefore, why? Because it pleases Krishna more. So one is trying to progress. So anything that's talking about here, it'll either be talking about the fruit of lifestyle and endeavor of the karmis, yes. But it also might be talking about those vestiges of fruit of action within our own life, you know, that we at some point offer to Krishna. You know what I'm saying? Because it's not that you come to the temple, you've worked, oh, you come to the temple on Sunday and you give a little money, and only that, I mean, so at least that much money has been given to Krishna, so it makes all that work and all that endeavor before worthwhile. It connects it all, so it's valuable. But it's not that one also couldn't be looking that all one's money is for Krishna, but this part of Krishna's money you can give for the temple, and this part of Krishna's money you'll take care of Krishna's family. You know what I'm saying? And this part of Krishna's money, you know, we'll buy, we'll invite Vaishnavas to our house and we'll buy some nice boga and feed them. You know what I'm saying? So it's all seen as Krishna's money, right? And the house is Krishna's, so therefore we'll be careful of what we do in the house. Does that make sense? Yeah. Is that okay? So there, that's formal. But that means the rest of it's not. But it could be all of it's there. But still, he goes and may formally give the money. You know, you don't just come to there and just as you're walking out, hand it some new bhakta and say, "Hey, give this for the president." No, you know, you properly give. It's money. It's Lakshmi. So, Lakshmi being feminine, it has to be protected. So it goes from your hand, who's responsible, to someone else's hand, who's responsible. Does that make sense? You know, so it's just the way you deal with money. So, does that make sense? So there's a difference in that formality and the formality of, okay, this I'm giving to Krishna, rather than it's all for Krishna and just working out what to use in what way for Krishna, right? That's the difference. The temple manages it, they make the decision. The grihastha makes the money, he makes the decision how it's being spent, right? But what he gives to the temple, that the temple takes care of. Otherwise, if he tries to control that, then you have the fruit of element. It's mine. It's not yours. It was never yours in the first place. Right? It's Krishna's. But, you know, he, as your quota, allowed you to deal with this part of, you know, his money. Right? And so this is given to the temple. They'll take care of it. This is what you spend at your house. You do. The temple doesn't tell you how to spend your money. You don't tell them how to spend theirs. You know? So that's the problem. You know what I'm saying? So then, does that make sense? So then you have all kinds of, resolutions on these things, because the community won't not tell the temple, and the temple won't not tell the community. But if everyone left it to each other, then there wouldn't be any regulation. There'd be no need, right? If it's all Krishna's, then you're responsible to see that it's properly used for Krishna. That's that. One should not be like the karmis who perform pious activities and formally offer the results to Krishna. That is karmakanda, right? So here, karmakanda is going through the ritual. That's the only reason that they're worshipping Vishnu, is because the karmakanda rules say you have to. Otherwise they wouldn't, right? But in devotional service, then it's not karma, it's karma misra. Because you're doing it, but you're still doing your activities and then taking a portion or even all, then giving it to Krishna after. That's the point. When it's given to Krishna before, then that's what it's talking about here. That's then, you know, your pure devotion. That's sannyas. Right? Does that make sense? So renunciation is still mixed. Sannyas is, that's what we'd say is pure. Right? And then within pure, we don't even leave it at that. Then we see there's a difference of pure unalloyed. Right? So does that make sense? You know, but pure is a good solid standard. You could say that's devotionally nishta. Right? It's fixed. It's solid. Right? Then from there, then one can improve. Yes. Shravanam to
Archanam.
To Archanam. No, technically Shravanam to Kirtanam. That's, you would say, is purely Bhagavat. Because these others you may do or not do. Because it's in the situation. What if the person is just chanting? So that's not because the situation is there. He's chanting. You know what I'm saying? So hearing, chanting, remembering, that you could say is directly Bhagavat. And then these others, then you would say, would be sadhana bhakti. Like that. And the last three then are showing the basically the level of the consciousness. Does that make sense? A level of realization, you could say. One should not aspire for the results of his pious activities, but should dedicate oneself fully and then act piously. Right? So he's saying, dedicate yourself, then act piously. Not act piously, then dedicate it to Krishna. But at least that's a start. But because Prahlad Maharaj here, this is 7th canto, so here we're getting, you know, the first elaborate explanation of someone acting within pure devotional service, not mixed devotional service. Right? Before Prahlad Maharaj, the examples are giving how to engage your conditioning in the Lord's service. Because Prahlad's conditioning doesn't come into the picture. You know what I'm saying? He's not a king. He's not a kid. Right? You know, he's not, you know... Oh, does that make sense? But, you know, how you say, Kardama is a Brahmin. He's a brahmachari. He, you know, he wants to get renounced, but he has these attachments. He's going to get married. Does that make sense? You know, all these different things, they're all someone working within their conditioned nature. Right? Even now we're reading Prithu Maharaj, but it's activities of a king that are perfectly engaged in the Lord's service. Right? So, as is pointed out, he's not controlled by the modes or by karma, but he sets the example for those who are. So therefore, the whole universe follows his example of administration. So all the kings of the earth, all the kings of the universe, then they follow his example. Does that make sense? But with Prahlad, then we're saying pure devotional service, where it's not in consideration of the conditioning. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why idea is one goes up through. Right? Means you're getting the foundation of what is, you know, the Bhagavatam, what is devotional, so the essential thing, that surrender to Krishna. Right? It's always about Krishna. Right? Uttara is surrendering to Krishna. Narad Muni is understanding, I mean, giving Vyasadeva the point that if it's not about Krishna, it's not worthwhile. Though the Mahabharata gives details of social information that you won't possibly find anywhere. Right? There's a saying that if it's in the Vedic literatures, it's in the Mahabharata. But what's in the Mahabharata is not necessarily in the Vedic literatures. In other words, he's taken what's there and taken it a step further and like that. Because he wrote it as the conclusion. And it is the conclusion of the Aparavidya. But Vyasadeva is pointing out that 700 pages, 700 verses out of 100,000 on, you know, Paravidya is not going to do the job. People are going to miss the point. So therefore the Bhagavatam, then your redefined Mahabharata, but it's establishing that without its connection to Krishna, it's not useful. Right? So when we think of Mahabharata, the first canto of Bhagavatam explains it. Right? And so all the major stories are there. Right? Like that. And it's all in connection to Krishna. Right? So we see it from the devotional point. There's no difference in those stories and the other stories of the Bhagavatam. Right? But when you read Mahabharata, the flavor is different. You could get it. It means you're supposed to get the results from the first canto, but you might get something else. That's the difficulty. And then that full surrender, Krishna will protect. So all these different things, because now if I'm going to accept the Shastra, I'm going to surrender to Krishna, then who will take care? Because now I'm taking care of myself. So then it's pointed out, no, Krishna will protect. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the idea. Right? Then we start off with this whole understanding that Brahman and Paramatma, elements of how Krishna's entered creation and everything. Then that being applied by Kardama Muni into family life, right? You know, and he's done quite well. You can't say that, you know, he was a failure in family life because he was too philosophical, like that. You know, and then just moving on Kasyapa, and you know, like this, moving up through the different stages until we get to Prahlad Maharaj and we see the pure. Right? But here it says, and act piously. So piously means according to authority. That's the point. So piety means acting according to authority. And so for the materialist, then that means just following the Shastra and the Brahmins in the authority of material advancement. Does that make sense? But when you're following authority and Shastra on devotional advancement, then that's devotional piety. Does that make sense? So acting according to authority, that's piety. Right? Does that make sense? Yes.
What is the principle that determines that an activity is a limb of bhakti?
That the activity is a limb of bhakti. Means, but you're taking it by these nine, or you're talking about what we talked before, the 64. Principle is it's something that can be. Yeah, just something that's connected to Krishna for his pleasure.
But then he says that, like, becoming a good person, developing good qualities, that's not an anga.
It's not an anga. Because being a good person, how is that connected to the Lord?
And then before it's mentioned that to be straightforward in dealings.
That's because that's the way God wants it. See, if you're straightforward in dealings without seeing the God consciousness of it, it's not an anga bhakti. Right? Being moral, you don't run off with your neighbor's wife because it's not a good thing to do. Culture people don't do it. That's not an anga bhakti. That's just common, mentally speculative ethics. Like that. Does that make sense? So it's not actually real, right? But when it's connected to the scripture, that it's doing that because that is part of the devotional process and therefore will please Krishna, then only it becomes devotional service. You know, so the devotee going out, getting himself a job, you know, having a nice house, keeping his front lawn nice and all that so that the local council doesn't get on his case. You know, he might even, you know, go to the local council meetings and take part and do something for the community. And he takes care of his family nicely. He comes to the temple. He has responsibilities. Now, that's devotional. But everything before, that's just mundane piety. I mean, mundane with a capital M. You know, any good Christian or good Jew or good, you know, whatever is the religion of the state, and they follow that, then they're doing just exactly the same. So what's the difference? You know what I'm saying? So it's only when it's seen in connection with the Lord, then it's connected, because you're dealing with indirect. Now these processes here, these are direct. So it's not a matter of only if the consciousness, you're worshipping the deity, if the consciousness is not there, you're still doing deity worship, but you won't get the benefit you'll get if you were conscious. Chanting the holy name is directly the holy name. Krishna's there, whether you're conscious of him or not. Right? But maintaining the family and dealing very nicely and keeping the place nice and clean and tidy and dealing with guests properly, that's indirect. It's mundane. Now, if you connect that to a direct rule, then it becomes an anga of bhakti. But if you don't connect it, it's just materially pious life. Does that make sense? But it's being, because being a devotee is supposed to be nice, and they're, so therefore being material and nice, and that, then they're automatically the same. No, the devotees aren't discriminating. Right? Does that make sense? So only in indirect, only if you connect it, it's connected. Just like you work all week at your job, but when you take some of that money and give it to Krishna, then it's connected. Otherwise, it was not connected. You know what I'm saying? So then they said, no, but I gave in the past. Yes, so it was connected in the past. Now it's not. You know, just like the lamp was plugged in yesterday, but now it's not. But you can't say, well, the light, you know, you should give the light lamp credit for the light it gives, but it's not giving any light. No, but it was plugged in yesterday and was giving light, but now it's not giving light. You know what I'm saying? So we have to be very, very careful about that. That's why in this year's study, means last year, it's showing how to connect things, you know, and analyzing the difference. But this year, specifically, what is actually pure devotional service and what's not. So, in other words, what last year was considered glorious, this year is considered, you know, it's not very important. Yeah. It gets no. That's just, these are the two. And then from there, everything, that'll which will go through the whole rest of it. Then you get more example both ways. Does that make sense?
I'm still a little unclear why being straightforward in one's dealings is considered an anga.
Why is it an anga? It's like this. How much time should be spent on devotional service?
24 hours.
Okay. How much time should be spent working out material problems, you know, that aren't devotional?
As much as is required, that I can be engaged in service with a Krishna.
Right. What happens if you deal straightforward with somebody? How much problem in the future will there be? Yeah. If I don't deal straightforward, how much problem can there be in the future? Right? So, and where will that time come out of? It won't come out of your occupation, and it won't come out of your family time. It'll come out of your sadhana. So if you're straightforward in ordinary dealings, then everything works efficiently. You're straightforward, you pay your bills, you deal properly, you were supposed to mow the lawn, you did it. Right? Because if you mow your lawn, nobody comes by and serves you a notice. Right? You pay the electric bill, then, you know, it just works in the regular way. You don't, there's a fine. So that extra money that they took, you could have used for Krishna. You understand? So therefore, straightforward in the dealings, it's just, that's the way. That doesn't mean blunt. Not straightforward. I come up to you and, Prabhu, you know, I've always wanted to say this, you know, I always thought you were real nonsense, and, you know, you're just over the top when it comes to, you know, prasadam and stuff like that. You know, so if you could just chill, you know, everybody here would be happy, you know, like that. So that's not what it means by straightforward in ordinary dealings. Ordinary means mundane. You're supposed to be cultured in dealings with Vaishnava. That's spiritual. That's another thing. You know what I'm saying? So straightforward, you know, according to your position and everything. Because straightforward, ordinary dealings means a time, place, and circumstance. You know, you're the junior, they're the senior, then you have to act like that. You're the senior, they're the junior. You have to act, you're friends, equals, you have to act like that. You know, it's official, it must be dealt officially. It's, you know, unofficial, it has to be dealt in that way. So in other words, this is just saying, deal with the material energy properly so that it goes efficiently, so that those material benefits that you're so hoping to get, you have the best chance of getting rather than wasting your whole life. Because if you don't, like I said, what you would get in 10 years will take you 30. So why wait 30 years to get that material thing that you think will make you happy when you could have figured it out after 10 years? It doesn't make you happy, and spent 20 years absorbed in Krishna consciousness. But because you think, no, all this is going to make me happy, therefore, you know, it didn't work. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing. And it works in everything, right? Airports would still be open if we were straightforward. You know, all these other things. People complain about book distribution. That's not because book distribution is a problem. Like that. It's one of the biggest businesses on the planet. Right? You know, it's because we weren't straightforward about it. You know what I'm saying? That's all. So, therefore, it gets in the way of one's material endeavor, one's spiritual endeavor. It just gets in the way. It creates problems, unnecessary problems. Right? You know. So then that also means, you know, you're supposed to be there at 9 o'clock at work. You're there at 9 o'clock. You're supposed to do your work. You do it. You know, that's why they're paying you. You do it. You don't try to sneak out of it like everybody else. But because you do the work, because you're following Rupa Goswami, says be straightforward. That's why you got the raise and the position, and the other guys didn't. You know, so it works in every. It's just the mechanics of the world. It's the mechanics of human dealings. Does that make sense? But you see it in connection with Krishna. It's ananga. You don't see it in connection with Krishna. It's not. You know, so all the mundane, whatever he's talking about, and everything else, all fits into that one. Because everything else we see is all deity worship and Bhagavat. And, you know, so one of the 64 then accommodates everything else. You know, it's like the et cetera at the end. You know? Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's easy, but it just takes practice to do. But the principle is extremely easy. That's why it's accessible to anybody. Anybody, any grihastha, anyone dealing with material energy in any way can apply it. You know. Does that make sense?
Maharaj, this point which he mentioned about ordinary dealings, plus the culture, knowing the culture, would be the means for me to know how to connect it nicely in the situation.
Yes, yes, yes. Because if you don't know the elements, how do you connect it? You know, if you don't know what the blender does, how do you connect it to Krishna's service? You know, I mean, unless of course you think it's a great paperweight or something. You have all these papers, they blow all over, so we'll put the blender on top, you know, like that. And so it's a really good investment because there's so many files like that. You know, you can put the blender, on, you know, the base on one thing. You know, you can put the top on another, the top of that on another. And then you have a little thing that unscrews in the top. That can go there. Then you have all the different paraphernalia. You know, you can put like, so I can hold down like 15 files with one good blender, you know, like that. And if it's a food processor on that, then that is even more. I can get at least 20 files I can hold down like that. I haven't quite figured out what to do with the plug yet, but like that.
You can use it as a shredder.
Shredder, okay. I know on the computer, you know how for you the floppy drive thing comes out? Like that one lady would put her coffee there. Then she was calling up and complaining how the coffee holder broke. And trying to think, coffee holder? Like that. So unless you know what you're dealing with, you don't know what to... You won't know how to engage it. I mean, you can make it up, but it's not necessarily the best engagement. You know? I'm sure it does work as a good coffee holder. Like that. Yes?
You mentioned that devotees first surrender and then perform their duties and practice in the home. What's the surrender in our lives then? Like day to day, daily basis?
You just see that the activity that's being done with the body, the mind, the words is for Krishna, his pleasure. Then when you do it, then it's already offered to him. Right? It means, in other words, you're giving the two ends of the example, the fruit of worker who does the work and then formally, because of the rule, is offering it to Vishnu. Not that they are interested in offering it to Vishnu. They're interested in performing the karma kanda, the rule that will get them the result. And then the person like Prahlad Maharaj, who's fully surrendered. Right? So we apply these two, so as much we can do that. And is so, in other words, we're applying these two parts of the upaya bhakti, is that how much we can surrender to Krishna and therefore do everything for Krishna, then that's the one anga. And then how much we can not do it for ourselves, that's the renunciation. Does that make sense? So between the two, then it's more thorough. Because if we just deal with one or the other, if we deal with just the mood, then there's so many things we'd be attached to, that because Krishna consciousness makes me happy, and being with my children makes me happy, and making lots of money makes me happy. So everything's so Krishna conscious and everything's great. That's what would happen on the sentimental side, right? And if you simply look at renunciation, then Krishna wouldn't be noticed, and there would be no prosperity, nothing would happen, because everything you do is wrong. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's all nonsense. It's all Maya. You know, it's like how you say the women are absorbed in, you know, their dress and their cosmetics and all these other things. So then you get these, you know, early Christians, or that's all Maya, right? And so, but what do the men spend their time doing? Going around seeing does that make sense? Like, you have these very strict Islamic groups, right? They go around seeing that they're not doing anything in connection with the Western culture. But you don't hear about them worrying about the men. They're always worried about the women. So even though they're saying it's Maya, but they're very absorbed in it. You understand? So it will appear, so prosperity won't happen, but the same attachments will be there, but they'll be in the negative. So you can't remove them. And now, because of this, you think it's religious. Right? Does that make sense? Like think about it. In these extreme, you know, social, a breakage of something social or religious, right? Or something like that. If you get the man, right, and you're going to, you know, tie him up with a rope and the question, and then hang him to see if he's actually, you know, the question. You put the hands behind the back and then tie the rope and then lift you by the arms. Very painful. Anyone will agree to anything, you know, like that, you know, like that from that. But then, you know, the idea is, no, God will give them the fortitude that they'll be able to get through and stuff, the truth. It doesn't work, but whatever. So you'll always notice when it comes to something like that, the men, just as they are, then they'll tie them up and this and that. The women, they always have to take off the clothes first. Right? Isn't it? You know, the men, it's like, you know, this guy's sinful. But the women, you have to strip them to show God their sin. You know, I'm not sure how that shows the sin, but you know what I'm saying? It's just the old, you know what I'm saying? So that's what my point is the renunciation, the so-called renunciation, they're still absorbed. Because only devotional service will the real knowledge and real renunciation come. Does that make sense? So it's just in a negative way. So that means their attachment to women will never be resolved because they can't deal properly. Right? Does that make sense? So it's not addressed. So the Vedic, it's addressed. So it's prosperous. But because it's prosperous, people get distracted. That's why you have to be very careful on the wording. So here he says, Prabhupada says, one should dedicate oneself fully. One should not aspire for the results of his pious activities, right? So according to our conditioning, Yanakanda, what does this mean?
No action.
No pious activity. Yeah, no, we don't do it. That's pious. We don't do that. And then, but one should not aspire for the results of his pious activities, but should dedicate oneself fully, right? And then act piously. You know what I'm saying? So just as Krishna taking everything away is the first state. Someone's attached, you take everything away, he'll surrender. But someone who's fully surrendered, then he can have all facility and he'll never get attached. So in the same way as not dealing with the thing because one's attached, that's there. But being able to deal with it and not be attached, that's better. Does that make sense? Like that. So we have to catch that. But that doesn't mean that paisa, that's great. No, it's making the point that only if you, body, mind, and words is first, then acting, that is upstanding. If you give afterwards, then it's going to be very mixed. How mixed? That's up to the individual. But if you surrendered first, then it's pure devotional service. Right? And we don't make that much distinction between, you know, the different levels of pure devotional service. Ultimately, yes. But otherwise, pure devotional service, that's standard. Right? Does that make sense? But when we're dealing with pious activities and then the results are given, then that, then, you know, has a very strong fruitive element. Now, it may be fully fruitive or maybe partially fruitive. But that's where we're talking about the karma misra bhakti as opposed to karma yoga. You understand? Karma yoga means I'm surrendering everything to Krishna but engaging in, you know, physical activities. Right? But then I'm doing the activities, giving the result, afterwards giving the result for Krishna. That's karma misra. You understand? So it depends on which you're looking at first. So that's why the process of Buddha Yoga doesn't change whether it's a process that's mixed or whether it's a process that's pure. The mechanics are the same. It's given to Krishna. It's just a matter of whether it's given first or given after. Does that make sense? You know, the action is there. The same action generates the same result. So now have you given it to Krishna before you acted or give it to Krishna after? You know what I'm saying? Like you're really hungry, you go in the kitchen, you're waiting, you're saying, oh, I want to cook this, and you cook this thing, and then it smells so good, and that I should offer this Krishna, it's so nice. You know, because you forgot. So then that's after. It's been offered, so it's good. It's connected to Krishna, so it's perfect. But it's not as good as you went in the kitchen and think, I'm going to cook something nice for Krishna. Yes?
It seems like sometimes also getting facilities can sometimes make us forget Krishna.
Yes, that's why Krishna has a tendency to not give them.
But
then the problem is as he gives, one forgets.
That's it. So, yeah.
So therefore,
if you're attached, he takes away, and then you surrender, and then he might give you some, and then you forget, and then
he'll take it away again. Then, yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah. Remember, that probably makes a point. He has 10 arms.
Yeah.
We only have 2.
So much time, yeah.
Yeah. So how much you can protect, or what, you know, you can give more than you can use. So. Yes.
Coming to the level of being conscious is enough to be situated on this level of pure devotion.
No, consciousness is where we start the discussion, right? in this kind of discussion, this thing, just like Shankaracharya, you take sannyas, then we can talk. If you haven't taken sannyas, don't even bother, right? You know, so here is that you're conscious, then we can talk, because then the consciousness has to be connected to Krishna. Because if you're conscious, but not, Hiranyakashipu was conscious of the whole universe, but not conscious in connection with Krishna. Right? So when it's connected to Krishna, then that's what we're talking about. Right? But you can only connect it to Krishna if you're conscious. That's what Prabhupada says, first be conscious, then be Krishna conscious. If you can't stop slamming the door, why do the devotees, brahmacharis, always slam the door? They're unconscious. Right? So how will they be Krishna conscious? You can't think, well, I slammed the door for Krishna. No, you're unconscious. It had nothing to do with devotional service.
So they're Krishna unconscious.
Huh? They're Krishna unconscious, yes. Yes. They're Krishna unconscious. Prabhu, you got to stop being Krishna unconscious.
Who is such statement?
Oh, okay. It'd definitely be a good one. No.
I know one teacher, Prabhupada Sankul, is regularly using this.
Uses it, okay. Okay.
He does some instructions.
Okay, okay. Very good. Unconscious, yeah. So that consciousness is that, then it should be favorable to Krishna. Otherwise, you know, then Hiranyakashipu and Kamsa, they're conscious of Krishna in a particular way. And they're always conscious. You know, I mean, Kamsa used to think 24 hours a day of Krishna. Even he looks in the mirror himself, he sees Krishna. You know, he sees death, you know, and all this kind of thing, you know. You know, most materialists, they look in the mirror, at least for that moment, they think of themselves, you know, like that. But he was always, so there, but it has to be favorable. And then once it's favorable, then it's free from karma and jnana. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the you know, the, your standards. These elements are there. Yes.
Can you illustrate the difference or the similarity between the prostitute who attained salvation, not the Brahma, and on the other hand, Haridas Thakur preaching to the prostitute, making her the holy first before she attained the highest situation?
Okay, well, let's look at it first. Now, would you be able to sit down right now in front of Tulsi and chant 3 lakhs of names every day for the rest of your life and not make any endeavor for anything, no, any facility? Would you be able to do that right now? No. Okay, so you're going to have to take the situation you're in, you know, as a family person, you know, your occupation, family, your facilities, and connect that to Krishna. Right? Right? But it's not that the other option is not there, it's just not practical today. Maybe after some years, yes, but now, no. Does that make sense? Okay? So, then, the prostitute that came and associated with Haridas Thakur, she was able to appreciate that and come to that platform immediately. So she could act on that platform. The other prostitute had to function in her, you know, worldly duties. Does that make sense? But one has to, it means, you understand, we catch this idea of the word, but if you look at it, do you have a would an old lady be engaged in the prostitutional occupation? No. So that means at the end of her life she must have been sitting down and chanting and doing all those things. You know what I'm saying? It's just like the man, you know, he's doing business and all that, but he's, you know, at least shouldn't be doing business when he's old. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So the point is it's not that all these different things aren't there. Does that make sense? You know, so the idea is that they're connecting whatever it is to Krishna. It's not ideal, but you know, it's the best they can do. But ultimately, if you look at it, being in the material world is not ideal. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Okay. In other words, one should act for the satisfaction of Lord Vishnu, not for the satisfaction of his own senses. So that's the point. If you surrender first, it's for Krishna. Surrender after was you were acting for your own senses, though you gave to Krishna. You know what I'm saying? So the point is when you're acting, it should be not for your own senses, but for Krishna. So that would entail practicing coming to the point of surrendering first, then body, mind, and words are engaged in the Lord's service, as opposed to they're engaged, you know, and then afterwards the result given to Krishna then means indirectly then now they were engaged. Right? That is the meaning of the word adha, directly. Anyavi lashita shunyam. Yana karma dhyanavaritam Anakul Yena Krishnanu Shrilanam Bhakti Rutama. One should render transcendental loving service to the Supreme Lord Krishna favorably and without desire for material profit or gain through fruitive activities or philosophical speculation. That is called pure devotional service. Right? So here we're just taking it that you're already conscious. Because if you're not conscious, how can you render service? Right? So that's what, if you're educated in a skill or body of knowledge, you have to become aware of it. If you're going to use it, you have to be conscious of it. Otherwise, you can't use it.
Maharaj, one of the reasons that statements like this one, which address pure devotional service, in the very beginning of spiritual life seems to be even aggressive to us, is because of attachment.
Right? Yes, it's just attached. Because otherwise, like that, somehow or another, that was the interesting thing about the 60s and 70s. Is the more aggressive ones, those who are like, wah, okay, you know, the more fired up. Yeah, yeah. You know. So it's like, you know, that was what impressed him. It was so different, you know. But now it's kind of like. But the point is that is called pure devotional service. It doesn't mean that what's less than that's not devotional service. But that's the iti in Anyabhilashita. You know? That is what's connected to that endeavor. But you know, it's always the small part, you know. You know, there's a point where you can connect these other things. But if we take that and expand that too much, the proportion's wrong. Because if we expand that much, then how big is the rest of devotional service? But if that becomes the main thing and this becomes then the side, it's the wrong thing. You know, here out of so many syllables, you know, 32 syllables, two syllables have been given to accommodate that. You know, and out of 64 items, then we see that, you know, one item has been given. Yes.
Will it mean that the prostitute is engaged in hearing and chanting?
Prostitute's engaged in... The thing is, if you want to get into this fully, then you have to be able to understand all the topics that we were discussing before from the last chapters of Gita and everything like that. Because the point is one is only an instrument anyway. So the point is the masculine, feminine principle and their interactive that you would call conjugal, who's defined that? Whose laws? God's laws, right? And then it's according to Shastra. We have to remember that when we're talking about Vedic prostitutes, they're functioning according to Shastra, right? According to Shastra, the prostitute will not engage in her occupation when she's impure. She won't even do prostitute activities when she's impure, right? Let alone go to a temple. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? So it's a very different lifestyle. She's only going to be engaged with somebody. It means whoever she's with, she deals with the person as if they're the husband. Does that make sense? So she'd do all the activities that a wife would do. You know what I'm saying? So this is very different. You know, we're not talking about they light a cigarette and put it on the side and says he got until that goes out. You know, that's not what we're talking about here. You know what I'm saying? So the difficulty comes is that we're trying to take this Vedic concept and squeeze it into this very small corner that when the Shastra defines that kind of prostitute, it's defined in one shloka. Means what today we call a prostitute is defined in Shastra in one verse. You know, but all the other things is that it's a whole different, you know what I'm saying? So the culture, you know, there's a good chance those prostitutes in many ways knew more and knew how to behave as a wife better than a married woman today. You know what I'm saying? Otherwise, why are they going there and paying money? Because the Veda concept is more about the emotional exchange, especially the higher the prostitute. The ones that you pay the most money for, it's only emotional. There might not even be any physical. Right? You see vestiges of that in the, you know, the geisha in Japan, and you have the concept. Just the tea ceremony, how they pour the tea and offer it to you. It's just so feminine. The guys are paying tons of money for that. So it's the experience of feminine interaction. So that's based on the masculine and feminine principle. What they're doing is all according to Shastra. So they're seeing it. The others are just seeing it. Shastra defines it. You do this way, it works. Therefore, you get your money. Therefore, it works. So they're pious in their impious occupation. Right? But here, you see it in connection to Krishna and all that. It's his energies at work. You know, he's the money, he's the masculine, he's all this, and so they'll see like that. Otherwise, why is it in the 11th canto that, you know, one of the main realization is given by the prostitute? She can understand that, no, it's Krishna's all this. There's no man that's going to, they're not, that's not, the money won't, the men won't, it's going to be Krishna. So how does she come to that conclusion? Just out of nowhere, she's just this gross prostitute, and then bang, it just hits her? Or she knows the philosophy and knows that, you know, that manliness that she looking, that's actually Krishna and that. But still, she's distracted so much by it, and then she's so frustrated, she just says, no, it's true. So we're talking something very different here. That's the difficulty of giving, is the culture is so different. You know what I'm saying? You know, so they're not going around and they're not ruining the culture. They're not out there with their placards and trying to break down everything and like that. They have their position. They do that. The society girls come along in Dwarka. Whenever it's described, Krishna walking into Mathura Dwarka, they always feature as one of the classes. You know, the common person, the kings, the seniors, the Brahmins, the prostitutes, they're all there. Why? Because they do their job. I mean, it's like, you want to have a stage program, right? And you want some ladies to come up and put a garland on somebody or light some lamps or dance on the stage. So in the Vedic culture, you get a society girl to do that. Because in the Vedic culture, no cultured woman would do that. And we're talking fully dressed. We're not talking, you know, doing a play and saying it's for Krishna and then you overemphasize all the parts about Kali and have some stupid dance with stupid music and dress stupidly. That even those prostitutes wouldn't do. It would drop their value. Right? Shastra says if the prostitute shows her breasts, it drops her value by 50%. 50%. Just like that. You understand? So that's the way it works. The ones in the window in the tiger skin, it doesn't cost much. The one on the in the first class, you know, seat next to the big businessman flying to Europe for some big you know, program, like that costs money. But you see nothing there. She's nicely dressed, high class. You don't see anything. So that's what the Vedas are describing. But we'll think, oh, it's this, you know, cheapo on the street corner coming up and knocking on my window when I stop at the light. That's not what we're talking about. Otherwise, the guy, that Brahmin, would have gotten, you know, a ticket from the police for throwing rocks in the street. Right? And obstructing traffic. No. But it didn't. It threw it in front of her house. Does this make sense? So can we put this one to rest? You're okay with it now? Any other? Okay. That's why you don't use the example, because the time to explain it is too long. Because before you just say it and they go, yeah, the Brahmin's got bad consciousness, and that's it. But now, well, how could the prostitute be a devotee? Right? You know what I'm saying? Before it was like, yeah, the Brahmin, he's thinking the prostitute, that's why he, and she thought of Krishna, that's why she went back to Godhead. That was all the more you thought. But now it's, how could she be a prostitute? Maybe she's the devotee. How could she be? It's like,
like that.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm saying, you know, are they supposed to not be Krishna conscious? You know, so it's like, you know. One should simply satisfy Krishna without being influenced by fruit of knowledge or fruit of activity, right? You just want to say, you're not influenced by it. It doesn't mean you're not performing it. I mean, the activity that gives a result. Because otherwise, if you don't have a result, how do you offer it to Krishna? How do you give money to Krishna if you don't have any money? Right? And you got the money by some kind of occupation. Right? So, when he says, one should simply satisfy Krishna without being influenced by fruit of knowledge or fruit of activity, means you didn't see it as fruit of activity. You're getting money for yourself. You're getting money for Krishna. Therefore, it's not fruit of activity. Right? That makes sense. Or you could take it at the other end, you know, the scary part, is that, you know, you don't do any of that and you just depend on Krishna and just chant. You know, like that. So, it can mean all of this. Scary and less scary.
Huh. Here it is said one should, and also in the verse, in the sutta, one should mean there is no alternative.
One should, yeah, but at the same time as using should, then means that it's recommending. Otherwise, it say one must. Yes. Must means it's imperative, you have to do it. But should, it's recommended. But it's not like soft preaching where one says you can. That's not very important, right? It's you should. You know. Yeah, you know, the human being should be engaged in self-realization. It's not he can be. No, he should be. Humans, yes, it can be an animal. He can be, but he doesn't. You know, I tried it once. I went up to a dog was sitting. You know, very peacefully, you know, sitting there. I went up, sat down in front of him, you know, made eye contact, he's looking at me. You know, started preaching some philosophy. He looked at me. He got up, moved over about, you know, 1 meter or something, sat down again, went back to his, you know, like, you know, just let me know, says, you know, hey, I'm not interested, you know. So, keep it to yourself, you know. So, yeah. You know, it's not like he got up and saw something, went up. He just got up and moved that far, that's all. Just enough to let me know that, you know.
He would hey, rather experience nothing.
Yes, you know, it's just like, you know, I was better before you came along. You know, he's getting nothing out, no pat on the head, you're not picking fleas, you know, nothing, you know, so it's like nothing to eat, you know, so. The Gopal Tapani Upanishad says that the word bhakti means engagement in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not anyone else. Right? So that means bhakti can't be applied to demigods or to family, you know. You know, it's like, you know, the child is God, so by working like that, you get that all the time with the Hindus come by, you know, child is God, you know, like that. So they're doing devotional service. He had such devotion when he was serving the poor, you know, like that. You hear it, yes.
This is some special Upanishad?
Gopal Tapani?
Yes.
Yeah, it's one that explains all about Krishna. Like that. You have Gopal Tapani and Nrisinga Tapani. Gopal Tapani, I'm not sure the subject matter, you know? Nrisinga Tapani is explaining when, or at least part of it explains when Brahma, you know, now we hear in Brahma Samhita how Krishna came and blew his flute and he gave the Kama Gayatri. And with Kama Gayatri, then the creation. So this explains where Nrisingadeva appeared to Brahma and gave him that Ugram Viram Mahavishnu verse. And with that, then he created the universe. So that's Nrisinga Tapani. Gopal, I'm not sure. To perform devotional service, one should be relieved of the bodily conception of life and aspirations to be happy through elevation to the heavenly planetary systems, higher planetary systems. In other words, work performed simply for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord without any desire for material benefits is called bhakti. Right? So if one wants something for yourself, that aspect is not bhakti. What parts you want to do for Krishna, that's bhakti. Right, so this thing is, well, if he did this thing for himself, there could be no devotion in it, or if it was done for Krishna, there could be nothing impure in it. No, it's the point is that part that the consciousness is right, that's bhakti, and that part where it's not, it's not. because the action remains the same. Right? Does that make sense?
When people pray, you know, please, you know, help me in this situation, so they approach God, you know, like Christian, would it be considered bhakti or not bhakti at all? Just meeting.
What's the point? When they approach God, is for what?
For themselves. You know, for their benefit. For their
so, I mean, what would be the devotional element?
They approach, they connect to God.
So, in other words, if they accept him as the authority and all that, then that's nice. It's a start in God realization. But where is its devotional service? Where is the service to God? You know what I'm saying? That they become conscious of God, then that's the start. So that's what we're saying. But is it favorable to God? Is it free from karma and yam? No. Is it favorable to God?
Well, it's his way.
His way. Is it his light also?
And truth.
And truth? But did they do it through his son? Yes, and the blood. Did you bathe in the blood? Who bathes in the blood? What are they talking about? It's like a bunch of savages or something. And it's like, bathe in the blood.
Eats his flesh.
Yeah, eats his flesh.
It would be karma.
It would be karma that they're God conscious. But it doesn't mean it's devotional service. You understand? Because if they're praying to do something for God, then that means then you have that karma misra element. You know what I'm saying? They're trying to do something there. Then that has another element. You know, praying to God to give the intelligence how to paint this nice mural on the ceiling while laying on your back or something. You know, so that could work. You know what I'm saying? But still, the element is how much of that he sees himself as an instrument and how much he sees that he's the doer. He's the big painter. You know, out of all the other painters, he got picked. You know what I'm saying? So you have to judge all these things. That's why the overall concept is given and then it's applied in all these details. But and then an example is given that brings together, you know, common enough principles and common enough details that most people could apply it in their life. But it's a problem. Like we said, this one example of the prostitute. So this. For many, it goes by, don't care. Some care, and they want to know detail. You know, so it's you give a general one. Does that make sense? But it's still, well, it's because it's general, it will apply to most, but not everybody. You know, and that's why your audience is more specific, then you can give a more exact example. You know what I'm saying? So you have to take all these parts and then judge, well, what is it, you know? Okay, are they conscious of God? Yes, so that's good. You know, is what they're praying for, is it favorable to God? Not specifically, you know, it's like that. Is it free from karma and jnana? No. Right? You know, so then, you know, what's good about it? That they're conscious that God is the, you know, this supplier. So that's great. But it's a lot nicer if you serve God rather than just get stuff from him for free.
He's the best on their platform, you know. If they are full of desires to approach God.
Or yeah, so that's where you start. You have so many desires to approach God, so that's great. So that's why we don't have any complaint about that aspect. You know, does that make sense?
Yeah, rather than try to figure out yourself, kind of, you know, I don't want to approach God, I don't want to bother him and do.
Yeah, because that's I don't want to bother God, so I didn't want to bother a devotee, so. No, but the point is he's the one anyway. You know, I don't want to bother God, so I will go on thinking it's my potency and my, and when it's his anyway. So, yeah, it depends upon the consciousness. Most of the time, it's well meant, but it's lack of understanding. But you have it now, you can. I've come across it. Bhakti is also called nishkarma, or freedom from the results of fruitive activities. That's why we can talk about nishkam. And it means devotion. It's like we talk about liberation, and it means devotion. Because it's actually synonymous, because bhakti means it's that. But you can take the nishkarma and forget the bhakti. Or you can take the liberation. That's why we make the distinction. But in general, when we talk amongst ourselves, we talk in this way. But if there's a need, if there's an attachment to karma or jnana, then you have to specifically make the division. You know, you're going to perform the pious activity. Pious activity means it's recommended by Shastra. Right? But if one thinks that is devotion, that one's performed the activity, recommended activity, and that makes it devotion, that's not. Or one is advancing out of the material world and freeing oneself from material entangle, that's not automatically devotion. Right? That you're being good, giving up the results of your activities, that doesn't make it devotion. But devotion automatically includes piety, nishkarma, liberation, knowledge, good qualities, right? Proper behavior, proper engagement of the senses. You know what I'm saying? So like that. Bhakti and nishkarma are on the same platform, although devotional service and fruitive activity appear almost the same. Oh, are on the same platform. Yeah, bhakti and nishkarma, devotional service and fruitive activity appear also the same. Okay. Bhakti is nishkarma, right? But devotional service and fruitive activities look similar because they use the same mechanics. You know, that's why we keep going back to this point, but we have to understand mechanics here is not specifically detail. Detail may be the same, because the point is if the activity, the detail of it is pious, you don't have to change it for devotional service. So the detail and the principle remain the same. But if the activity, the principle of the activity itself is impious, but the principle you're trying to obtain, you have to find what's the pious detail or application to gain that particular principle. That would be better. Does that make sense?
So bhakti and nishkam refer to the consciousness, and devotional service and fruitive activity refer to the externals?
You can take that, but the most direct common point is the result. Fruitive activities, it's for you. Nishkam, it's not for you. Yeah. That's the most direct, because the mechanics are the same. You know, that's the thing. Like Kardama Muni getting married was part of the devotional process. Someone else is getting married, and it's fruitive activities, right? But his purpose was so I can be freed from material desire, so I can focus on pure devotional service and go back to Godhead, right? So it's part of that process. So it's not fruitive activities, but it's engaging, pious activities in the Lord's service, right? Pious activities used for yourself is called fruitive. Pious activities used to please Krishna is called devotion, nice karma. Does that make sense? So the problem is the overlaps, that we're a person, we're still going to do people stuff. See, if we came in here and said, you're all doing all these things, you're all attached. So therefore, then to be spiritual, give up all engagement, all that, all desire for anything, any desire you've had, any engagement of the senses, and just focus on the Supreme. You know, real straightforward, you go, okay, yeah, that I can see as spiritual. There won't be any questions. Well, what do I do when, I got to go to the bathroom? You know, there might be some practical stuff like that, So things, because if it's an illusion, then why do I have to go to the bathroom? So it seems pretty real when I got to go to the bathroom. like that. So that's straightforward. But when you find out that whatever you're doing, thinking, experiencing is all Maya, and so you're going to give all that up and engage in spiritual activities, which means exactly the same experiences, exactly the same activities, and exactly the same, situations. Well, how does that make it spiritual? Because we're so looking at externals that we miss the point. It's simply the endeavor done to please Krishna is transcendental. The endeavor done to please ourself is material. Is that so? That's what we're trying to discern between, and that, and then even in that, there is the attitude in which you perform the activity, right? So we see we focus, you know, on two main things: who's it for, and what's the mentality, right? The activity itself isn't the big discussion. Does that make sense? Because the devotional activity and the material activity, much of the time, are the same, right? If so, Hari Das Thakur, then it's not really the same. But for everybody else, basically, it's the same. So the mentality that I'm servant, it's for pleasing Krishna. I simply want to please Krishna. That's the added. So it defines the sambandha, right? And then the prayojana is that the results are for Krishna. Right? If I am my own person, then it's material. If the results are for me, it's material. Right? If I'm Krishna's servant and I try and want to please him, that's spiritual, devotional. If the results are for Krishna, then that's devotional. Right? The activity remains the same. This is where the confusion comes in, because the activity is where we actually see the work. Because the others are a bit theoretical, so we can discuss that here and there. So you know, if we discuss we're not the body, we're the soul, that works fine. The result is for Krishna, that works fine. Because that, you know, you're going to do the same, you know, job. You were you know, a big manager in the company, so you're going to come to the temple and do, you know, big manager of Krishna. You know, but then, you know, but what about all these things that you should do that for this? No, is it for Krishna or not? You know, and then you refine the details as you go. So the confusion comes in that overlap, because Abhideya is done with the knowledge of sambandha, but it gives the result in prayojana, right? That's why it's actually the central feature. But on the material platform, we don't put as much emphasis on it. But on the spiritual platform, it's all about the Abhideya. You know, there's a little discussion about, you know, the attraction to Krishna, or, you know, pleasing Krishna. It's all about Krishna's interaction, the pastimes, and that. Does that make sense? So only in prayers or some discussions you'll hear about sambandha and prayojana. But otherwise, it's all about Abhideya. But here, you know, it's pretty ho-hum, the Abhideya here. You know, I mean, the activities here, and that's special. So what's the emphasis is that the results for Krishna are the identities about Krishna, because that's what you can do as devotion, right? So sadhana is that you intellectually have to look at the position, and you intellectually have to look at the results. So therefore, there is the desire to serve and then having to deal with the conditioned nature. So therefore, there's two parts, right? Always remember Krishna, never forget, right? But on the pure unalloyed devotion, you only identify as Krishna's servant and spontaneously want to please him. So there's only one anga. Right? You don't have the part to not have to forget it. Does that make sense? Yeah? Oh, over time. Okay. So end here. Okay. That's obvious.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jaya Srila Prabhupada ki, Samadeta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jaya Nitya Gaura Prema ki.